The Tom Woods Show, episode 1977.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey, everybody. Today's episode is brought to you by Ignite. With Ignite, your small to medium-sized business can share files securely, safe from ransomware, and with a user-friendly interface your team will love. Start your free trial today at ignite.com. That's E-G-N-Y-T-E.com. Hey, folks. Tom Woods here. The great Michael Malice is our guest today. You know Michael in multiple capacities. He is a wildly successful ghostwriter, but he is also an accomplished author in his own right. His most recent book was a major smash, The Anarchist Handbook. And of course, he is the host of You're Welcome over on the Gas Digital Network. You can watch that on the usual video platforms. And I want to talk to Michael today a little bit about social media because he is a real master of it, particularly Twitter. And I just want to have a spontaneous back and forth about social media and what it can do and whether or not you should be on it and what platforms you should use and stuff like that. So, Michael, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Tom.
All right. As a Texan, you have a lot to say probably on this topic. I don't know if that's true or not, but we are recording for the first time ever with you not being in New York City. That makes me sad, and I don't want to talk about that very much.
It makes me happy.
Yeah, but happy in, I don't know, a bittersweet sense.
No. I feel like I've left an abusive relationship.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe so. But as with many abusive relationships, for a long time, that was that sense that he loved you or she loved you. You know, you had that sense of it, right? They're abusing me, you know, yes, but they love me. And then you get disillusioned. Well, let's talk about something.
Yeah, but then it's not bittersweet. Then it's like I dodged a bullet.
Yeah, I guess so. It's just that I associate you with New York, you know, and our visits up there. And it's like a chapter of my life is closed now that you're in Austin.
Sure, a big chapter of my life is closed. I've been there all my life, of course.
Yeah, yeah. But on the other hand, another chapter is opening. Michael Malice driving me around in his car someday.
I haven't even taken the first steps to learn how to drive because Uber is so useful here.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll see what the future holds. All right, anyway, let's talk about social media. This is a topic we were going to hit one time, and then spontaneously we chucked this topic and talked about something else. So let's talk about, the thing is, we could talk about big tech and censorship and all that, and should the government regulate it and all that. And I don't know, I'm kind of bored with that topic at this point.
But it's a private company, they can do what they want.
Yeah, I know. I'm so sick of hearing that. But let's
Tom, did you know that Yelp violates the non-aggression principle?
Oh yeah, how's that?
Well, because it's a private company, you could do it whatever they want. So if you criticize a restaurant, you're violating their human rights.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, that's right. I love these people.
I want more of them in my audience.
Yes, please. I know. All right. Well, when I first met you, you even had a thing on your website saying that you're more frequently to be found on Facebook than Twitter. And then that changed. Like, it really changed. Like, you're not really on Facebook at all anymore.
I'm not at all, correct. The only time I look at Facebook, I have a couple of chats I'm running with friends of mine. You know, isn't it weird? I don't think you do this as much as I do, but you know, there's different people I talk to. And, you know, thanks to social media, the base of social media, of course, being communication, I'll have one conversation with someone that's been going on Instagram, and then someone with texts, and someone that's been going on with Facebook for years. And you just stay with this application, even if you don't use the application otherwise. So yeah, it's kind of funny.
Well, just before we started recording, I got a text from you saying, I have to hop on with Tom Woods. I'll talk to you later. And I assumed that old Malice had sent that text to the wrong person.
Oh, I did. Hold on a second. Oh, duh. Let me reply to Jake. Oh, hi, Jake. That's really funny. And what's even funnier is I'm with him on Signal, but I'm with you on text.
All right. First of all, eventually we're going to get to, I want you to tell us something about Signal. But I want to talk about Twitter because, first of all, what was it that suddenly made you realize there's some benefit to me spending more time on this platform? What kind of feedback were you getting?
That's an easy one. Because on Twitter, you can tell celebrities to their face how despicable they are. So I remember like Nancy Sinatra had some tweet about the members of the NRA should be lined up against the wall and face a firing squad. And I just replied to her, at your age, I think you know a little something about staring death in the face. blocked, right? When, what's Woody Allen's ex? Mia Farrow.
Yeah.
You know, she had the, and I'm going to curse, so bleep it, okay? I'm sorry.
Okay.
But is this, I'm just being accurate to what I said.
Yeah, sure.
She had some comment about we should listen to the Pope because he's good on the environment. I don't remember what it was. And I just replied, bitch, you gave birth to the Antichrist. Blocked. So that is the kind of fun stuff you can do on Twitter that you couldn't do on Facebook. And the other thing is Twitter has a caste system, which you're not privy to, but let me explain it to you and the other Untermenschen. Twitter has a verified badge, which is how Twitter acknowledges that you're a real person and not, you know, some very failed podcast or a human being. But as a result of this, in the replies to a tweet, it's not reverse chronological order like Facebook. The verified replies are at the top of the stack, right? So if there's someone who's saying something and I would reply, my reply would be up front above yours or Dave Smith or any other such failure. And that is an actual useful asset because then I don't have to get in on that first second. I could get in a little later, but I would still be front and center. So
yeah,
those
okay.
were two advantages Twitter had.
I didn't know about that one.
Well,
how would I?
Well,
yeah, how would I, right?
But yeah, I've said too much.
But another thing, another difference between the two is that if I make some snarky comment, let's say on some celebrity's Facebook page, and then they block me from the page, the comment also disappears.
Right.
But if you're blocked by a celebrity on Twitter, yeah, that celebrity can't see that comment anymore, but everyone else can.
And so they can reply to it.
Yeah, so it keeps going.
Yes.
Even in your absence. So
right.
That's very interesting. So now obviously, you've built a following through the various things you do. You're on very, very high-profile programs on a regular basis. You have a very popular program of your own. But I would say that a big chunk of your following also has come from people who enjoy your Twitter exchanges.
Oh, sure.
Because you now have a very, very large Twitter following. So for us, you know, us newbies, not newbies, but let's say us students, we'd like the master to explain how you did that.
That's a great question. I think I am definitely someone who's bigger on quantity than quality. Most tweets are basically like farts of the brain, right? They're just throwaway thoughts. And I think what people like is aggression, but when it's done in a, at least for me, when it's done in a clever way. What I found a lot of my audience, my supporters, I would have thought it's young men who are like maybe socially maladjusted. But it's actually much more commonly like professionals or small business owners who, because they have a family, they have to kind of bite their tongue online or have sock accounts or things like that. So they really appreciate that I'm the one who is kind of waging this kind of battle for what it is, at least in social media. Now, this is kind of a grandiose way of describing it, but I think there's a lot of people, I think it's indisputable. There's a lot of people, and pretty much I would bet everyone listening to this, who feels very frustrated at the state of affairs. And they also feel frustrated that they're not in a position to really do anything about the state of affairs. So when they see anyone, even in a very small way, such as myself, standing up to people who are sincerely evil and doing it in a humorous way, I think this kind of makes their day. Or at least that's what I've been told. It's very hard to have kind of any kind of perspective on this kind of thing.
Right. Well, some of your, you know, the volleys you've made at evil people really, really make the rounds. And I mean, you racked up, you know, tens of thousands of likes on them. So it's definitely responding to, let's say, a market need out there. But also, I see you interacting with a lot of people who are not well-known and maybe who are particularly like boomer cons who are very irritating on Twitter. And you also interact with them in a way that gets people interested. And sometimes you'll string them along, like they'll misunderstand you. And instead of you clarifying, you'll string them along. Like they didn't understand that you were being sarcastic or using irony or whatever. This was completely lost on them. So you'll just keep stringing them along. And if anyone comes along and says, hey, you dope, don't you understand what Malice is doing? You block that person.
Yeah, don't get on the stage and tell the, if someone's being the, what's that term? The mark. If someone's being the mark and you feel the need to insinuate yourself into this conversation and ruin the, you know, the performance for everybody, like you are a horrible person. But I want to be a little clearer. I do pick who I interact with. And I've often said that engaging with boomer cons is self-trolling. Now, maybe boomer con is a term that's a lot of people probably aren't going to be familiar with. it's a boomer conservative, and they're really the most mindless people on Twitter. I always say engaging with boomer cons is self-trolling. And these are the kind of people who genuinely think that it's of use to tell people, we're not a democracy, we're a democratic republic. And well, if only they listened to the Constitution, we wouldn't be in this mess. Well, yeah, that's right. They're not listening to the Constitution. What are you going to do about it except stamp your foot impotently? And they're at their worst where they will just keep repeating things independently or irrespective of what the input is. They will just have the same output. So the lowest of the low, I would say, are like people are Candace Owens fans. So if you criticize her or disagree with her in any way, and she wouldn't particularly do this either, they will just say, oh, you're just racist because you're threatened by a strong Black woman. And they'll just keep repeating that. And you're realizing you're really dealing with someone who is just barely above coma level.
The idea that that kind of argument, which is, of course, made against them all the time,
right,
is something that you would be dying to use on somebody else is just unthinkable to me.
Yes, yes. And yeah, it's like, they think it's a gotcha. It's like, well, if when you're called racist, boomer con, you don't care. Do you think that it's like, you know, showing a cross to a vampire? I don't even, there's no thought process there. They just, you know, regurgitate a few slogans. And that's why I say, if you engage with them, the only person who's going to get their feathers ruffled is yourself, because there's no one there. You're arguing with a dog, basically.
I get people telling me every now and then, even though I am on some other platforms, but particularly I have an account on Odyssey, O-D-Y-S-E-E, for video to back up on YouTube. And I'm on MeWe, which is where my private group is. And that's actually worked really well for my group. But I have people telling me that I should just proactively remove myself from YouTube and Facebook and Twitter and just be on these alternative platforms. And I can't go along with the thinking there, because it's the same thing as saying, hey, what are you doing on with Alex Jones? He says a lot of things I disagree with. And I've been on Alex Jones. You've been on with Alex Jones. I don't even know half the things Alex Jones says. I don't know half the things most of the people I go on with have said. But my thinking always is, no matter who it is, that if this person is generous enough to let me speak to his audience, I'm going to speak to it. And likewise, if Twitter, which has an audience of, I don't know, 500 million, is letting me speak to that audience, it would be shooting myself and our cause in the foot for me not to be there. Now, it may lead to someday my not being on Twitter anymore. I mean, maybe they boot me off. I don't know. I don't think that'll happen, but that's possible. But until that happens, I don't see what's gained other than my own sense of self-satisfaction, but I don't think that's a good enough benefit.
First of all, why would YouTube ban someone who's got like 50 views a video?
Yeah.
How would you ever be on their radar screen? It's just
But it's amazing to me, though, on YouTube, I have... Wait, by the way, do you actually have a YouTube channel? Well, you do for the show.
Of course, yes.
But before that, was there a Michael Malice YouTube channel?
It is a mic. It's youtube.com/MichaelMaliceOfficial. You could see the link in the show notes page.
But before you had a podcast, what did you do with it?
I don't know.
Okay, all right. So it really came into use.
I had all my TV appearances. No, I didn't. That was Eric. Eric put on his page. I don't know what I had on them.
Okay.
That's a great question. People go back and look at my first video was. I don't even remember.
Well, I've got the reason I ask is that I had a warning and now I've had one strike and you only get three strikes.
What was your strike for?
Strike was for, I had Thomas Massey on and they took that down.
Wow.
And the only so-called medical misinformation that they could possibly be referring to is that we were saying that it's becoming increasingly clear that natural immunity gives you more robust protection. I mean, that happens to be a fact.
Of course. No, I don't think that's even in dispute.
So now what I have done for the past couple of episodes, first of all, I'm on a week-long ban from YouTube because I had Congressman Massey on. But now what I have to do is, because I had the guy on who makes the fake masks where they're yeah, mesh and they're breathable.
Yeah, minimally compliant masks.
Yeah, well, this is Fake Masks USA. There's
okay, there's more than one. I love the market. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Well, this guy, of course, you can imagine. PayPal's harassed him. Facebook has harassed him and all that. So I thought he'd be an interesting guy to talk to. He was. But I realized I can't put that on YouTube. That'll be strike two.
Yeah.
So once I'm off my ban, I'm going to place placeholder videos on YouTube and say, I'd love to share episode 1975 with you.
Yeah, click the link, yeah.
You got to click and go on Odyssey where they actually will let me do it.
Well, let me answer the question you had earlier,
yeah,
which is I'm probably been one of the most outspoken people in favor of having national self-segregation by ideology. So I think the people who are advising you to proactively leave YouTube are speaking to that. At the same time, it's kind of like there's so much motivation on the right to just do the opposite of what the progressives want. And it's really anytime people think about equality or symmetry, it's really lazy thinking, because if something works for the left, it's not at all necessarily true that the dynamics would be the same on the right or a mirror image of it. That's just this very lazy thinking. Now, that may happen, but if that's your knee-jerk reaction, you're doing something wrong. And I think what they think is that there's enough of us, right, who are going to get off YouTube, that's going to be like a boycott effect, and that they're going to check their premises and they're going to change their program. They're like, oh no, come back. I think that's crazy. They are much more interested in monopoly control of a conversation, as they demonstrated how they've been approaching COVID discussions, including banning doctors. You know, this isn't banning jerks like me or you. These are actual medical professionals who have medical opinions backed by data. So if people self-segregated, not only would that be great for them in this context, but then they could also have the appearance that everyone's in agreement, because whatever video you look on YouTube, people are going to be within these same parameters. So, I mean, your show is about burning the index card. It's not like taking it home. So the point is, you're in their house burning it. So I think retreat is something that is often the right thing. I think people should pick their battles. I'm not someone who's saying, you know, if the cops come to your house, you should come out swinging or something like that. People have families and jobs and things they have to consider and take that into account. And I don't at all regard it as cowardice if someone's playing the long game. Maybe this is my Soviet mindset speaking, but I don't agree with that at all. And I also don't agree, in broadly speaking, with people who are supporters telling creators what they should and shouldn't do, right? Like, a lot of times people will tell me, oh, you shouldn't use the word anarchism, the word's tainted, you should use the word voluntarism. That is a very messy word that people aren't familiar with. And I've done pretty well embracing the term anarchism, as people demonstrated. So they can use whatever term they want. This is a term I've been associated with and have done an enormous amount to make legitimate, and legitimate on my terms. So if you haven't made something happen, we all have opinions, you know, sitting in our armchairs, but it's a lot easier to be the guy yelling at the TV than to be the guy on the TV. It's not a question of someone being particularly bright or intelligent. It's a question of, to get to be that guy on TV, there's a lot of trial and error that goes on that isn't made public. You know what I mean? Every author, I'm sure, you're actually an exception. I'm not being sarcastic because of how you got to become an author, has some books that they've written or manuscripts that they have written in their desk that never saw the light of day. But you don't see that in the audience, because all you see by definition are the books that have become published.
Hey folks, let's take a minute to file another one under How the Tom Woods Show Improves Your Life and thank our sponsor for today, Ignite, E-G-N-Y-T-E. All over the world, companies hit by ransomware attacks have their valuable digital files held hostage and have to decide whether they're going to pay these jerks to get them back. So JBS supplies 25% of the country's meat. They paid $11 million to get back up and running. They just couldn't afford not to operate. Or Colonial Pipeline, a single leaked password compromised their billing system. They paid $4.4 million, shut down the pipeline for days. Well, ransomware can come for any company in any industry, but small to mid-sized businesses get hurt the worst. Well, Ignite is the first ever file system with sophisticated ransomware detection and recovery tools fully baked in. So it lets your teams create and share documents in Microsoft 365, Google Docs, Slack, Salesforce, DocuSign, and countless others, while keeping your company's data safe. And by the way, as I know firsthand, most security software has a terrible user experience. It's not user-friendly at all, and you hate it. But I have used Ignite, and it is way, way better. Your team's actually going to love using it for a change. Ignite is going to give companies like yours with limited IT and security staff the power of much larger teams. So learn more about how Ignite can protect your business from ransomware. Start your free trial today at egnyte.com. That's egnyte.com. Another thing I want to say about Twitter, as somebody who's kind of known for selling things and teaching people how to make a living online and stuff like that, is that I see people trying to use Twitter in that way, Like, yeah. Hey, everybody, here's, especially like podcasters and stuff, here's the link to my merch store. Now, the first time you're unveiling your merch store, sure, tweet about it. Hey, everybody, I have a merch store. Maybe you didn't know about it. But there's somebody, I'll tell you who it is afterward, who every third tweet is, you want to buy some merch from my merch store? That is not a tweet that's going to get any traction whatsoever. First of all, that's not what Twitter is for.
You're wrong. My shirt's about governors to give now.
Okay. No, that's okay. That's different. I'm talking about merch where it's just the so-and-so show. And like, there's no cleverness to it.
Okay, agree.
So first of all, yeah, you actually have something really flashy and interesting. Like the fake masks, if Twitter would allow that, that would also do really well because there's a huge population with a visceral response to that and they want that sort of thing. But if you're going to try to sell something, you got to at least make the text kind of engaging. Like every once in a while, there's a sale on Rocket Languages, foreign language program, and the affiliate terms are just too good for me to turn up. And I know these are excellent foreign language programs. But if I just say, hey, everybody, there's a sale on foreign language program, there's no traction. But right. If I say, listen, when they finally let us out of our homes, we might want to travel again, and it might be useful to know another language. Suddenly, that's hundreds of likes as opposed to 30. So you have to know what you're doing. And I see people every single day follow me on Twitter who have zero retweets, comments, or likes because it's, hey, watch my seminar on how to recruit affiliates. Nope, right. That's not what people are on Twitter for. Right. I feel like primarily, although I do sell some things, I do make some money, I do monetize my Twitter, it's primarily to build my following. And then once I have that following, you know, they're listening to my show or whatever, then maybe I monetize that. But most people are not on social media thinking, I wonder what bargain on merchandise I can get today. That's not where they are.
That's not my experience I've had. The Anarchist Handbook has largely been a function of Twitter and my audience. And, you know, I put the updates there all the time. They get a lot of engagement, keeps people excited.
Yeah, okay. So all right. No, that's true. That is an important correction. And the thing is, if I had a new book, because I haven't written a book in so long, like an original book, it's actually been 10 years of original material. I have not written a new book. I think that would go crazy on Twitter, actually.
Yeah.
So I would sell that, but I would not sell Tom Woodshow socks over and over and over. I would let them know once, but if unless I can come up with a very clever way of doing, because in this case, because the item is associated with me and people right. are kind of on Team Woods or Team Malice,
right?
And they want Team Malice to do well, and they're going to spread the thing around. I think this is a very important amendment to what I said, that changes it. Because it's not just another product being hawked at them. It's something different. It's part of a group they belong. It's a belonging.
Yeah. How many, right. And here's the other, like your book Meltdown. I'm sure like 75% of the audience didn't know or care who you were. They wanted to read about the content, right? Same thing with the Anarchist Handbook. There was maybe that number's a little different because it's become so closely related to me. But a significant percentage of that audience isn't buying it for me because it's not my content, except for one essay. They're buying it because they want an overview of what anarchism means. So same thing with the difference between Tom Woods socks, which no one who's not a Tom Woods fan would buy, as opposed to, hey, here's my book about, you know, COVID or whatever. Then I don't need to care who Tom Woods is. I want this information.
And incidentally, of course, the COVID thing has done insanely well for me. It seems weird to say that, but in the sense of it's gotten people who have never heard of me before suddenly to want to engage with me because they're thirsty for something. And so I think without social media, I would have been at a great disadvantage.
Oh, for sure. You'd be DOA.
Yeah. I mean, I could try and promote it just on the podcast and stuff, but then those are people who know me already. And I have so many people who say, thank goodness I found out. You know, it's a common thing, Michael, when people say, thank goodness I found out about old Woods. I honestly get that in my email. I'm so glad that I'm seeing the sorts of things that you're doing. Can you explain to a boomer like me?
Those are all fake sock accounts Dave has made up to make you feel better.
That's very, very sweet of a guy like that to do for a very failed podcaster. Can you explain to me?
I'm a very failed author.
I'm not that much older than you, but...
Okay, boomer.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Explain to this boomer, I know that it's people who are anti-censorship and pro-privacy seem to like it, but that's all I know about it. What are the merits of Signal? Apparently you're on it?
Oh, yeah. So I know people who are pretty knowledgeable about how the state gets into our phones, and they've all said that it's not ideal, but Signal is the best application for encoding or encrypting, text messages, or chats like that. So a lot of people are on it as a consequence. And also on Signal, you could set it to vanishing messages. So the texts vanish after like a day or so.
Right. I think, but Snapchat works that way too. You can have it vanish.
Yeah, but my understanding is Signal significantly more secure. But I'm sure there's people out right now who have their opinions about this. But this is my understanding based on people whose opinions I respect. I'm not an authority on this at all.
Okay. All right. I guess I'll look into it because, yeah, I don't necessarily want the whole world reading you know, my crazy thoughts sent to people. So now with YouTube now, I sometimes wonder, I have friends. Well, let's take Dave, for example. Dave's show, part of the problem, consists of most of the time him and Robbie the Fire discussing some topic.
Right.
It's been a long time, actually, since I've seen them bring on a guest, but that used to be part of it. My show is almost entirely guest-driven.
Right.
Now, but when Dave is talking, just has a monologue on some topic, I'm sure that he has said many of the things that got me the warning or the strike. But yet he doesn't get a warning or a strike because I don't think anybody's sitting there going through all of Dave's programs. But the difference is my program has Thomas Massey in the title, or the other guy who YouTube hates, but who's excellent on COVID, and in fact, who got Eric Clapton to have second thoughts about the whole thing, is a guy named Ivor Cummins. And that's a very unusual name. So if it were Joe Smith, it would be harder to do this. I actually think they may flag that name. And it doesn't mean that everything gets banned, but it means it gets a second look. How else do we account for Dave?
You're right. And I could tell you how. Yeah. I know you're right. So I recently had on Your Welcome, Alex Jones, right? And the instant I uploaded it, it was demonetized because his name was in the title.
Yeah.
So
okay. They
definitely have a filter for him. And also I did a live stream over the weekend I just sit and talk to the fans. They send me questions and someone sent me a super chat and they asked me about QAnon. And I jokingly said, thanks for demonetizing this live stream. The second the stream ended, and the stream is just me with a mic talking to the camera. There's no guest or anything like that. The second the stream ended, it was demonetized. So they clearly have some kind of audio filter for certain terms. And I had a manual review and the review approved it. But there are certain terms that I can say with a very high degree of certainty, YouTube will immediately catch on to them.
Yeah, so that, hence my new strategy of just anything they could remotely give me a hard time on,
I think this is an uphill battle because remember, a few years ago, Twitter was being very weird about what are they going to do about people who they don't like, people like Milo, people like Laura Loomer. And first they unverified them, which was very odd because it's like, wait, are you saying this no longer is the person that you verify them as being? It was a very weird mission of their caste system. But then they explicitly made their policy that even if someone says things that are objectionable, not on Twitter, we are still going to ban them from Twitter. And that was the reasoning, I believe, why they banned Laura Loomer. It wasn't for specific tweets. It was for specific behaviors or actions outside of Twitter. So I think, yes, you're having a workaround, but I would bet significant money that they're going to, or maybe at this point, the battle's lost for them. It could go either way, but that this is not something that is long-term going to be efficacious.
What do you think is the value of social media to the average person? Now, before you answer that, for me, because I have I hate to use this term, I have a brand, but I have a podcast, I have a newsletter, I have products, I have, you know, ways I make my living, and I would like to reach people with that. And this is a way, you know, with the exception of Facebook ads that I don't even really use anymore, it's all free for me. So I feel like I would be dumb not to use it. But at the same time, unlike you, who seem sort of unflappable, I find that I get really irritated seeing how many stupid people are in the world, and it bothers me. Like, I have to answer them all. And sometimes when I just take myself away from these stupid exchanges and I sit and read a book, I feel more content. So if there's a person out there who isn't trying to do what I'm doing on social media, namely promote his show, promote his brand and whatever, and he's just a regular person, is there still some value in social media, or is it just a big pain in the neck?
I have no idea. I'm so removed from normies. I forget what it's like talking to them at this point. But I'll speak to what you're broader point, something I'm very big, a lot of times people ask me, and a lot of this, of course, inside baseball, people are like, oh, you know, why are you responding to this person with 9 followers? First of all, I don't go to everyone's profile to see how many followers I have. A tweet looks the same, whether it's
right,
other than verified or unverified, whether it's someone with 1 million followers or 10 followers, I'm not going to, in the notifications, they look identical. So to do a background check, even for 1 second, is just, to me, a silly waste of time. And also, just because someone has few followers doesn't mean their ideas are stupider or smarter or more interesting or less interesting than others. So that's something I disagree with. I don't understand at all your impetus to engage with a lot of people. It makes no sense to me. I block people very frequently. I'm very vocal about blocking people very frequently. And part of the reason for this is that we're all taught since kindergarten that one of the big points of schooling is that you're going to be forced to interact with people you don't like, and you just have to suck it up. This is a lie. You're never, other than through the state, forced to interact with people you don't like. Now, sometimes you might say, okay, at work, maybe we're using the word forced loosely, but on social media, like there's absolutely no reason for you to tolerate 1 second of someone being obnoxious at all. And they will give you endless reasons why you have to tolerate their BS. And people are like, well, if you block them, they're going to get what they want. Okay, who cares what they want? Like, there's no scenario where they're going to like you or respect you. So you might as well flush the toilet.
I guess it's that for some reason, it gets under my skin when people repeat things that are just, it just shows they're highly suggestible. They repeat whatever they're told, and they repeat totally nonsensical things that have destructive effects. I feel the need to smash them, and I can't, it's very hard to resist.
You can't smash them. It's like if the dog stops barking, it's still a dog.
Yeah, I know.
How's that been working for you?
I know it hasn't been working.
I don't understand. I mean,
but there have been times that I've shamed people into just deleting their tweets because I've embarrassed them.
Yeah, but sure. But the point is, you're not deleting these dopey ideas that are in the zeitgeist because these people are interchangeable. You have to stop viewing them as individuals and start seeing them as part of a swarm.
Yeah, the swarm really is the word.
Yeah, there's no. It's one mind in many persons. You're a Catholic. You can, or is it the Protestants who believe that?
Yeah. What? No. Both. Yeah. Well, the Trinity. Yeah.
Yeah. Three in one. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I'm not quite sure what the conclusion of all this is, but I think I'm not alone in being interested in how you do Twitter. And what you do, like you don't do a lot of retweeting. You'd retweet sometimes, but it's mostly your own. I mean,
yeah.
Whereas I do a lot of retweeting because I'm lazy. I see something and I say I want the world to see this, and I just retweet it. But I find you interesting and engaging, and I want to follow your feed. And that's whereas there are a lot of people who post the dullest, most boring stuff or phrased in the most boring way. Maybe they have something valuable to say, but they don't understand what Twitter is. I mean, Twitter is, I don't know, it's a giant, I don't know how to describe it, but it's not a forum for debate. It's not what it is.
And it's also funny because people are like, why do you guys spend so much time talking about Twitter? Twitter isn't real life. Twitter got a president elected, and not just a president, someone who, I mean, had no business in a sense being president, who's not a politician, who was just a reality show blowhard. So it's just that, I mean, I think people should appreciate the power of this application.
Yeah, without a doubt. So obviously to follow Michael on Twitter, it's just at Michael Malas. Very easy. I'll link to that at tomwoods.com/1977. Mine is stupid because unfortunately everything had been taken, and I don't want some stupid handle. I want it to have something to do with my name. So unfortunately, I'm at Thomas E. Woods, but that's because all my books were always using my full name. So
why don't you make it like Tom Woods Rules?
I guess I could. There's nothing stopping me.
Or the Tom Woods. Tom Woods.
Yeah, I mean, I could do that now that I kind of get how it works 8 million years later.
You could change your username without losing your account. You know that, right?
Yeah, I could make the name, but I would still keep the at thing the same.
You could change the at thing also.
But I don't want to do that.
I'm just saying, there's other people listening, like they have that option. Because here's something else. If you are a small account and you want people to get traction, a lot of times the default, like if you just sign up, it'll be like Jeff73745.
Oh, yeah,
like
you don't want that.
People with bigger accounts tend to dismiss those because those are throwaway accounts. So make sure you have some sort of profile picture, because I have a filter. If you don't have a profile picture, I don't see your notifications. It doesn't have to be your face. Just put a picture of a house. It doesn't matter. And have the name be like Jeff is the best, or the best Jeff, or the real Jeff, anything like that, to make it seem like it'll take you literally 3 seconds. But if you're at all interested in using Twitter better, the dividends will be enormous.
All right. So last thing, and I'll let you go. Just sum up, just simply, I mean, we've heard about the sorts of things you can do with Twitter, but if you had to explain in a nutshell, why do you spend time on Twitter? What is it accomplishing for you, Michael Malice? What would be your answer?
I did it for the lulz. Same thing I do everything else. It's a source of greater entertainment for me. And I'm at the point in my account, which is growing quickly, where I have a much bigger following than some cathedral operatives who are trying to spread really depraved ideas. And to know that their whole day is going to be ruined by all these notifications, because this is the thing, they've been trained to think that if I go out there and pontificate, everyone's going to applaud like the end of a movie, right?
Right.
So if I get into their replies and now their replies are full of people just calling them out on their crap, they'll be able to dismiss those psychologically, right? Oh, this is haters, blah, blah. But no one's coming to their defense often. And that, which was what they had been promised, gets them a little bit off center. And that's something I enjoy enormously. And even if they don't care, which many times, many such cases, they won't care, the replies will still see that I'm getting much more likes than they are. And that will be a symbol to the broader audience that not everyone thinks like this a-hole. Not meaning myself, meaning the person I'm replying to be clarified.
Right. Got it. So, all right, follow Michael at Michael Malice, and I'm looking forward to seeing you. By the way, when I see you at the 2000th episode, October 16th, tomwoods2000.com, when I see you at that thing, it will have been 2.5, is it possible? It's been 2.5 years since I've seen you in person.
Is that true?
I mean, it almost seems like that can't be. No.
No, we saw each other during COVID.
No, a year and a half. It's a year and a half.
Okay.
No, during COVID. Oh, wait. Did we really?
Didn't we have dinner at that lunch at that steak place? I think that was during COVID.
But what city would it have been in? I haven't been to New York since. I haven't been to New York since COVID.
Really?
It's been a year and a half since I've seen you.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
That's ridiculous. So we'll rectify that with whatever the hell it is you have in store for us.
Tom, you have no idea. The special guest I'm bringing is going to be absolutely amazing. Everyone's going to lose their minds.
I can't wait.
I'll give you a hint. It's Ayn Rand's head.
Well, if anyone were to be in possession of it, it would be you.
Possession is the right word, yes.
All right. Thanks again, Michael.
Thanks, Tom.
All right, everybody. Remember, Michael Malice is going to be at the 2000th episode event of The Tom Woods Show, as we just mentioned. So check out tomwoods2000.com. That's October 16th, 2021. Get the details at tomwoods2000.com. Hope you can join us for that. Tomorrow on the program, let's see, who the heck do I have on here? David Stockman. David Stockman of the Reagan administration. I had him think about if our side were to somehow be electorally successful, and we had, let's say, a sympathetic Congress, and we had somebody like David Stockman in the White House, what would he do? What would be a few things that he would do right off the bat? So let's get a little program going. What would we, in fact, do, and how would we do it? And David, in fact, spent some time thinking about this, and he came up with 4 things in particular that he would do. So we're going to talk about that tomorrow. So make sure you have subscribed to The Tom Woods Show over at tomwoods.com/Apple, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of The Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.